Hello, Dr. Carcente. This is Shelley Schlender. Is this a good time?
Yeah, it's a good time.
Oh, good. Well, I've wanted to talk with you for quite some time.
I don't know what it means, but I will try to help you.
Okay. Well, it's just that your research has been so interesting. You have discovered things that nobody else seems to have known.
Yes. Well, yeah, we have been lucky, and we have try to continue on this work for the last 10 years, probably.
Yes, and it all started with a hunch, it sounds like.
Yeah, it started when we realized that mice that were lacking a gene made only in osteoblast, osteocalcin, were having more fat and were subfertile. And therefore, we re-explored the clinical literature. I re-thought the biology of bone. And I came with a hypothesis that there must be a common regulation of bone mass reproduction and energy metabolism. And so the reason for that is that bone, first of all, is the tissue that covers the most surface in our body with skin, probably. And second, it is the only tissue that contains a cell type called the osteoclast, whose function is to destroy the host tissue. And this occurs in a function that has been conserved throughout evolution and is necessary for life, which is called bone modeling. Bone modeling is what allows growth, longitudinal growth of the skeleton. If you don't grow, you cannot walk. And if you cannot walk, even this day, you cannot live.
Well, and in fact, that was interesting for me to think about, because it brings up that question, why do we need osteoclasts? I gather that shells do not have osteoclasts.
Yeah, but they don't grow. You need to be able to destroy and reform bone to be able to elongate the skeleton.
And you also need to be able to destroy bone to keep it fresh and resilient. Is that correct?
Yes. So this process is very costly in energy, and therefore you need a mechanism to make sure that you were not going to grow when you could not eat 500 million years ago, when food was scarce. And therefore, the physiology has been designed so that bone growth occurs in the conjunction with energy metabolism. There is a co-regulation, so that you do not decide to elongate your skeleton at the wrong time and then put all the other organs in failure.
And so when an animal is starving or when they're hibernating, that's not a time where they're going to put a lot of energy into regrowing bone. If an animal is not hungry, if they are full and they're getting lots of signals that they have plenty of energy, that's more of a time when their bones are going to grow.
Okay, so I will put the hibernation process aside because it's different, but in vertebrate animals like us, it is known that if we don't eat, we don't grow. This is what you see in children that have anorexia nervosa. Those children do not eat and they do not grow. And anorexia nervosa, which is a disease where the people refuse to eat, in adults causes osteoporosis. So this is a clinical foundation that led us to think that there was a co-regulation of bone and energy metabolism.
And how about in countries where children just don't get enough to eat, so they're not
they
lacking?
They don't grow.
Okay, they don't grow either. I think that the explanation that you have of how you describe the upstairs and downstairs serotonin is very elegant.
Thank you. But I mean, serotonin, the fact that the gut, which is the organ where there is intake of food, so there is intake of energy, regulates bone through serotonin is consistent with the general hypothesis that there is a common regulation of bone growth and energy metabolism, because energy metabolism is not only appetite, it is also intake of food or intake of energy. And in fact, it starts with intake of food. So that is consistent with the general scheme we are pursuing.
Well, you know, most people think of serotonin as simply a hormone that makes them feel better. But from an evolutionary standpoint, you're looking at the fact that it helped creatures go out and seek food. Is that a good way to put it?
Yes.
How would you describe it? I mean, do single-celled creatures have serotonin?
Yeah, so worms have serotonin, and in worms, like in humans, serotonin favors appetite.
It favors appetite, it favors feeling restless so that a creature will go out and take risks to
find...
Well,
it's difficult to know for worms if it makes them feel restless, but it certainly increases appetite. If you remove serotonin from worms and from mice, both animals stop eating.
It increases their seek and find behavior so that they, that they're more willing to take risks to seek out. It increases their risky behavior in pursuit of food.
In the pursuit of food, yes.
Well, that's not how most people think of serotonin.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, that's the way, that's what it does.
And is the way that it works in the brain when it gives a signal different from how it works when it's the gut that gives a signal?
Yeah, so in the brain, as you know, serotonin does not cross the blood-brain barrier. So the serotonin made in the brain stays always in the brain. And in the brain, serotonin favors bone formation, favors appetite, upregulates both functions. In the gut, in fact, serotonin made in the gut inhibits bone formation. So the question is, which one is the most important one, as a dominant function, if you will? And it turns out that it is the brain serotonin, even though it is less abundant, that exerts the dominant function, because if you remove serotonin in mice from the brain and from the gut, what you see is the consequences of the absence of serotonin in the brain, the one we call upstairs.
And that consequence, if it's missing upstairs...
Is osteoporosis.
Now, how about appetite? You said that the gut serotonin inhibits bone formation.
Serotonin in the brain favors bone formation.
And does it favor bone formation at the tops of the bones where they're kind of soft and spongy, or does it favor keeping the bones strong all the way through?
All the way through.
Okay. Now, how about serotonin in the gut? When it is high, it inhibits bone formation, but on the other hand, does it inhibit appetite, or does it make people eat more too?
No. Serotonin made in the gut does not affect appetite. It is only serotonin made in the brain that favors appetite as well as bone formation.
Well, would you please tell the serotonin in the gut that if it's going to mess up our bones, could it also reduce our appetite?
No, it does not reduce appetite.
Okay. All right. Because you'd think that if it does one thing that is a problem, it could at least do something nice for us too.
No, it does not.
Okay. What do you think functionally is the... Now you did mention that when people take a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, basically an antidepressant, that this actually can interfere with bone growth.
It interferes with bone growth, but this is obviously a more complex mechanism, because these drugs affect serotonin in the gut, serotonin downstairs, and serotonin upstairs. They affect mood. So essentially what you see, nevertheless, what you see in patients that take serotonin reuptake inhibitors on the long run, often, not always, is that they develop a decrease in bone mass and an increase in appetite, which is what we observed in mice lacking serotonin in the brain.
Okay. I also found myself thinking about autism because I have occasionally interviewed people with autism who describe how sometimes when their gut is giving them troubles, they feel more calm. And when their gut is not, they feel more anxious. And that led me to wonder whether if their gut is releasing serotonin.
Yeah, I don't know. We have not studied autistic patients, or we have not studied mouse models of autism, so I don't want to overextend our
sure.
conclusion to something we have not tested.
Okay. Well, then I'll ask it more basically, which is, what would cause the duodenum, that little pouch that's underneath the stomach, to create more serotonin? What are the things that make it increase its production of serotonin?
So we don't know the answer to this question, but this is something that is very important for us and that we are studying right now. But we don't have the answer. Obviously, it's a very important question
okay,
that you are asking, and we don't have the answer yet.
All right. And so as follow-ups, though, are inflammatory markers generally higher when the duodenum is producing serotonin?
No, we have not seen that.
Okay, so...
We have not seen that, no.
Okay, and in celiac patients who have clear destruction and inflammation in their gut, do they produce more serotonin from their gut?
I don't know the answer to this question, but I would suspect probably not, because celiac disease is downstream of the duodenum. It's further down than the duodenum. So I cannot give you a precise answer because, again, we have not tested it, but I would think not.
Okay. Now, do you, so there is just, it's just a question. That's all we know, is that it's a question you now know to ask about what is causing that duodenum to make more serotonin.
Yes, we are asking this question.
Okay. Now, when you mentioned that serotonin is the only hormone that has different functions upstairs and downstairs,
it's not exactly true. There are other molecules. I was a little bit, over-optimistic here. There are other molecules, but this is probably the only molecule affecting bone mass differently depending on its sites of expression. That is true.
Okay, it's the one that affects bone mass that way. But
yeah.
Was it also easier to figure this out because a lot of other hormones do cross the blood-brain barrier, so
yes.
It's harder to tell what they're doing upstairs versus downstairs?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, but we do know that some hormones, depending on where they're made or where they're acting, they do different things.
Yes, we do know that. Like, for instance, the endorphin and others, but they don't affect bone, or it has not been shown that they affect bone to the such an important extent as does serotonin.
Okay. I found myself wondering whether the duodenum would inhibit bone growth if it is sending out serotonin, if somehow that signal is saying that it needs to conserve energy to keep the digestive tract maintained. It's kind of sending a signal of, guys, we need this energy because we're in trouble, and so don't put it into bone right now. I wondered that.
Yeah, well, it's possible. Again, you have to realize we are just at the beginning of this project, even though it is 3 years old, and we are now trying to explore why the gut regulates bone mass. And to do that, we are trying to answer another question, because answering why question is always difficult. And the question we are addressing is how the gut regulates bone mass. And what are the mechanisms underlying this function? And once we will obtain them, if we do, then we will have a better understanding of the purpose of this regulation.
Yes, I like to ask the why questions, which is why I'm not a scientist. I think
Yes.
the scientists need to answer the how questions.
Yes, absolutely.
And which, you know, my next question was, why do you think we evolved to need healthy bone growth in order to produce a healthy amount of insulin? And is there another way you
No,
want to answer that, or?
we did not evolve to need bone to regulate insulin. We evolve in a way that the energetic cost entailed by bone modeling during childhood and growth has to be regulated or in constant dialogue with energy metabolism. So insulin regulates bone mass, and bone in turn regulates insulin, so that the two organs function hand in hand, and again, we do not decide to grow when there is no food around. So this is not that we decided that bone has to regulate insulin. It is a more global regulation. For bone growth to occur, it has to be tightly co-regulated with energy metabolism to avoid failure of any other organ.
Okay, now insulin has many functions for allocating energy. Most
Yes.
people think of it as just a way to lower their sugars, but actually it's allocating energy. And if the osteocalcin does not release the signals for the beta cells to produce more insulin, then that would reduce how much the body is storing energy as fat.
Yes, but again, you have to look at physiology in a more integrative way. There is bone, but there are many other organs. Bone is one player whose importance was not recognized before, and we are trying to define its importance, but there are other organs.
Oh, okay. So you're focusing a lot on getting bone into the playing field, that it's
Yes.
been left to the side as just bone is bone, and you're saying it's we've discovered that fat can be a hormonal organ. We've discovered that there's a lot more orchestration between our different body parts, and you're saying bone is part of it too.
Yes,
Okay.
and it's an important part of it. And it is, in a way, everything makes sense a posteriori, but in a way, it is logical that it is part of it because of this constant destruction and formation it goes through. And it cannot occur in a vacuum. You cannot decide to grow 10 centimeters in 6 months at a time we don't eat. Because if you do that, you will put all the other organ in complete failure. So no organ works in a vacuum. No organ is an island. And what we show is that in fact, bone, because of the modeling process and because of its size, has an influence on energy metabolism and on reproduction. Much bigger than initially than thought at all.
Well, that's right, because if you have broken bones, you don't want to be trying to reproduce.
Yeah.
Now, how about translating your findings from rodents to humans? Rodents, because they don't live very long, they don't get very insulin resistant. And humans do, and rodents don't get leptin resistant. They can be, you know, the effect of leptin and insulin can be knocked out of those rodents, but their cells don't do the over time becoming more insulin resistant or leptin resistant thing that happens in humans. So well, that I'm sure that will complicate matters.
It may or it may not. Time will tell. There are investigations ongoing to study the therapeutic impact of our work in human, but I just want to make one point. I don't know of any molecule that has been identified as a hormone in mice and that had lost this a characteristic in humans. So, and in fact, the growing body of clinical literature dealing with osteocalcin demonstrate or support the idea that osteocalcin is regulating insulin sensitivity in humans. So will we be able to translate it in a drug? I don't know that, but obviously we are working towards this goal.
Are you hoping to translate it into a drug?
Yes, I'm hoping to. Of course, I'm hoping to.
Well, I'm not a scientist. I'm not in the field of the patents and the profits involved in that. I find myself thinking, what could we translate it into in terms of how people exercise, in terms of how people eat, so that they wouldn't need drugs?
Yeah, but I mean, that's wishful thinking. I don't. Most people, when they are put for 10, 15, 20, 60 minutes in front of the food that they crave for, at one point will succumb to temptation. So it's we can go back in time and put us in a caloric restriction. It does not work well that there are other complications. We have to deal with the fact that we live in a civilization of too much, and drugs have to take care of that. We cannot say to people, eat less and hope that it will work.
If you were not indoctrinated into a society that believes that, and you were simply looking at metabolism, if you were simply looking at metabolism, and let's pretend that it was the other way around, instead of believing that people would not follow a way to eat that would help their health, you instead were in a world where there were no drug options, how would you tell people to eat?
I have no idea. I did not think about it because this is not the reality in which I live.
Okay. Well, then my next question was about some of the paradoxes that come up. That, for instance, it's my understanding that if leptin levels are low, that's the most likely time when people can build and remodel their bones. That's the most likely scenario for somebody to be able to do that. And you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
And then how about when somebody is very obese, they tend to have the strongest bones, meaning the ones that can carry the most weight
because
on
them. Are leptin resistant. So it's like if they don't have leptin. Obesity is a state of resistance to leptin. So these patients have high bone mass, and that was part of our initial thinking to study leptin 10 years ago. And as you know, leptin appears during evolution with bone, not with appetite.
Okay, so when someone's leptin levels are low and they're leptin sensitive, they're likely to have strong bones.
Yes.
Or if their leptin levels are high because they're leptin resistant, so their brain is thinking they don't have enough leptin, then their bones are strong.
Yes.
And then there's all the rest of us who have, you know. And then there's that other, but that makes sense to you?
Yes.
Interesting. And it's because the brain interprets the signal as being not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How about that one about the duodenum in gastric bypass surgery for people who are very overweight, who have their stomachs bypassed into the gut, so that it basically bypasses the duodenum? Why would they be more prone to bone breaking?
Yeah, I don't know if the clinical literature here is very strong or convincing, but again, this is a more difficult situation to interpret, because when you do this type of surgery, you remove many molecules, not only serotonin. And we don't know yet the influence that each and every one of these molecules exert on bone. So, yes, by doing that, you think immediately you remove serotonin, so you should have high bone mass. But you remove many more things than that. So it's not a clean situation to do physiology.
Okay, well, you did answer a question I had, so that surgery does remove serotonin from the mix. Mm-hmm.
And many more molecules.
That's right, because sometimes it cures type 2 diabetes. That's puzzling too. So it sounds to me like you are on the trail of many, many answers.
Thank you very much. I hope I will deliver some of them.
What are you the most curious to figure out next?
I never really know what I'm working on next. So when we will have a story, it will come out probably, I suppose.
If you found a way to eat and people did it that improved their bone strength, and a way to exercise, and people would comply with that.
Yeah, that would be nice, but we are not there yet, absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate talking with you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.